Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Here's another conference call we had with five or six of the new HMA consultants, two guys out of Australia and three or four here in the U.S., and then a potential HMA consultant, and Richard's on the phone. So Richard gave us about an hour and a half of his time, and we fielded all kinds of questions from the consultants all over the world. Hopefully this will help you answer some of the similar questions you have going on in your head, and I hope you find this helpful. Let's get going. I want to welcome everybody to this conference call. We've got existing HMA consultants, and Richard, I want to thank you for taking the time and handling some more Q&A with some of the new consultants and a couple potential future consultants. Now, I had some people send in some questions. Why don't we start that way, and then we'll try and get to everybody. Richard's got an appointment, so we've got about an hour and 25 minutes. So I really want to keep the questions succinct. Going to just rapid fire through them, and if we have time left over, we can expand it in more detail. So hopefully we'll be able to do that. First of all, I'd like to welcome Jeremy Wood. Jeremy and I have been talking over the last several months, and he was a factory worker and has been listening to my audios for
3 years.
3 years on the job. He's got some interest in some of the other products I have, but certainly in the marketing consulting arena. And Jeremy, do you have any specific questions you'd like to ask Richard and myself in relationship to the HMA consulting thing, other than what you sent me here, or we could even handle these?
What kind of project you can do from a distance? You know, I know you did Jordan with, you know, across the country and out of the country even. Now, I'm assuming you can only coach, that you can't really get in and set up joint ventures and integrate their USP for them. How do you know whether it's going to work or not?
With George the Tanning Guy, he's in Canada, and I was able to work with him to create a USP, because in the steps of developing the USP, it's an interview process, interviewing him, interviewing his employees, and interviewing his competitors, and interviewing some of his customers. And I had George send me a database of his customers. I did the research on Google for his competitors, and I interviewed him. So using the phone and the internet, I was able to get all that same information from him, not even being in Canada. So we were able to develop a USP. Now, I wasn't there. He really had to implement and act on integrating that USP. I could tell him what to do, but like I said, when you have a client, you've got a business partner, and you're going to really have to rely on him implementing some of this stuff, especially if you're not in the same city or town. So, I mean, I can understand it may be harder. A couple of the other things I had him do with his tanning salon, I had him photograph. I wanted to see what the place looked like. I had him go around the whole place and shoot me digital pictures of the outside, of the lobby, of the room, so I could get a feel of exactly what it was like as if I walked in there to visit him. You know, I had pictures of the girls, him, himself. So I had a feel of what it was like, and then through using the phone and asking questions, and I was able to do the USP, and we were able to integrate it. We've been doing direct mail with his customer base. We've been handling incoming calls, and the joint ventures, we were able to do one or two of those. It is a little challenging in getting him to implement, because he is a business owner working in the business, so it takes a little time for him to do that, but you got to stay on him. But it's doable, probably not with everybody. Any response on that, Richard?
Each one's different, and technology's made it a little easier. But you might then just price it different. You could say, I'll do all of this at a project fee, and then I'll coach you on these parts at a less fee. So you could just really manipulate the system according to the client's ability. And I've done both. I've just done coaching fees that could be long distance and have been long distance versus implementation fees that are more on site.
You also asked, what's the best way to measure the revenue increase brought to a business by the consultant's strategies when working on a per project contingency or contingency only fee structure? So I think we've had this question come up several times. Richard, how do you get a baseline to measure, you know, what the business is doing, so you can have an idea if you're doing a percentage of growth? A
couple of things. One is, in step number two, the first thing you want to do is find out what the numbers are in prospects, conversion, and average client value. So you all remember the three ways to grow. There's the baseline you want to get as quick as you can in working with the client, is to try and find out how many prospects are they contacting or are inquiring on a weekly or monthly basis, how many are becoming customers, so I get a conversion rate, and then how much are these customers buying over a year or 2 years or 5 years, whatever you want to establish. Then that's the basis you would measure any contingency on. So after I implement my system, What increase do I have in the number of prospects? What increase do I have in conversion? And what increase do I have in client value? Are there things that my system did which increased those numbers? Did I draft a letter to current customers that brought in more revenue and increased value? Did I train salespeople to increase conversion rates? That's why I always kind of recommend, before you take on a contingency job, get paid some fees first and build a relationship with the client. Make sure you've got some basis and measurement that you both agree on. And that usually takes two or three projects to kind of get that relationship going. But in the absence of that, you would at least start with those three numbers. And some of them have those numbers. Others don't. Some of them you'd have to operate on a gut feel in time that you're the first one that's ever going to measure it. That's why a contingency in that relationship would be questionable, because you haven't measured before, they haven't measured before, so how are you going to get paid?
Well, I want to add, you know, if you've got a client, and many clients are doing nothing or very little, so if you approach them to do a direct mail letter to their customer base, which they've never done, that's not going to be hard to track, especially if you keep control of the leads and the flow of the leads. And I talk about that a lot in some of the recordings. You want to remain and keep control over those numbers. So let's say you're going to use your efforts and your intellectual property to send out a direct mail letter to a guy's client base, especially if it's on a contingency. You want to control that phone number. You want to go ahead and sign up and register an 800 number or a number that you control. And that way, you can have proof and evidence of any results. So, for instance, you may have heard me talk about a service here in the United States called Call8, K-A-L-L-8. I can get a phone number in minutes for $2 a month. I can put that phone number on the direct mail piece or the promotion or the outgoing calls, you know, for people to return calls, and those phone numbers will come to my number. The calls can be recorded, and they can be forwarded to your client's place of business. They never knew that the call was intercepted, but at the beginning, you tell them that's how you're going to operate. So that way, you can keep control and measure and have evidence that you produced the lead, so it ever came down to a question of, you didn't produce for me. You have proof of the people who called based on your results. And if your client chose not to pay you, you could simply stop the flow of leads to him, so you have some leverage that way. And I found that to be pretty effective. KALL8.com. It's great. Did Wayne Black join us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Wayne, good morning.
Hey, Michael, how you going?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Okay, great. You want to handle any questions with Richard right now?
Yeah, I just heard the tail end of the contingency question, and I won't re-ask him that one unless you want to ask him, is that the same as the one that I emailed to you?
Yeah, it is actually pretty similar on how to measure the results on a contingency.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I've got that, and I'm recording the call, so I'll have that as soon as I clean it up. I'll have it up there for you to listen to. Anything else, Wayne? How's everything going?
Yeah, good.
What is the best marketing strategy, Richard, yourself, or any of the other consultants use to gain consulting business? Strategies that are relevant to a consultant starting from new, besides telemarketing, cold calling, and referrals. Starting out, consultants can't benefit from referrals until they get up and running. Richard, you got any suggestions on that?
I just first say a marketing alliance. I've formed some relationships with maybe an accountant or a printer who's already in touch with small businesses, do a workshop, have them sponsor a workshop. Your chamber groups, associations are good. And I'm reading here the email from Jeremy Woods, and, you know, he says, as a member of the Business Network International, it says it works very well. That's kind of the way to get started most effectively, is to find a marketing alliance relationship.
Paul, you're on the line. I know this is exactly what you've done. Can you describe how you've used your marketing alliances to generate clients with what you've been involved in?
Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce has always been good. I've been very active, as you know, in chambers for a long period of time, and I'm just basically calling people up and saying, this is what I'm doing. Let me come in and do an opportunity analysis of your business. I've also had good luck recently with a new chamber that I joined that I wrote a press release for their monthly newsletter, my committees as well, and I was introduced as a committee member, and I had a guy actually come running up to me in the networking portion and said, I need to talk to you. I need your help. And that was great because the chamber membership was $3, and I'm charging him $2 grand a project, and I got a minimum of 3 projects lined up. He's also a franchisee. Told him typically that's not the type of business that I go after. They have a real lot of information. Mark Hills is a very well-run franchise operation. He can't implement it because he doesn't have the time. So basically, I'm charging him $1,000 a month to implement what he already has.
That's a great point, and I want everyone to hear that point he just made, and that is that clients buy for different reasons, and in this case, he's buying time. He's buying execution more than development of marketing strategies. His franchise already has those, and they usually do if they're a good franchise. But in this case, he's buying execution because he doesn't have time to do it.
And from my standpoint, what really affects that particular franchise, now he's communicating with corporate, and I'm not sure. There's about 400 of these franchises around, so might have something further with additional ones. But
there you go.
Benefit to me is that I'm getting all of his marketing materials and the strategies that have been developed by a very good marketing department. Like, he's paying me, and I'm getting a free education.
Now, are you charging him by the hour, or are you charging just to implement stuff?
I'm doing the project. Right now, I'm doing a U.S. because I'm saying to him, what is from you? Because there's several other personnel and staffing services in my area, which is Cincinnati. And I'm asking him, why are you the best express personnel service in the country?
And that's a franchise?
I do have one, and it's good, but I wanted to go beyond it. And I tell people that, you know, even though you have a franchise and you have this operation, that is what they are telling you. But there are 4 or 5 others just in Cincinnati. What makes you, you know, of the same franchise?
Saying much the same thing.
Yeah. And why are you different from them? What is making you better than your competition? I've done the interviews with the customers, and, you know, competitive research is my project for this week. But very interesting in that you typically would think a franchise would all be telling the same message. What I learned during the customer interviews was that the previous franchise owner was not good. So under the new ownership, and he's only had the head up for the last 2 months, I have him telling me there's a marked difference between what they had done and what they are doing now. So that is, it has an incredible passion I'm able to, I'm planning on integrating into the USP, that passion, not something that's going to be broad-based around the country for all the different franchises. That's what I told him, why I was willing to work with him, because, you know, he's a startup, only 3 months in business and a franchise. I said, you've got a passion that is going to be part of the USP. People he's hired to serve his customer base he's looking for the people with this type of passion, so that's going.
Yeah, you've got new hidden marketing assets.
Exactly.
That's what you've got. You've got a change of assets.
You're saying, I care so much about my clients, and I guess we're one of the J. Abraham articles where he talks about the definition of a customer being a commodity versus a client they're deeply for, and able to. I'm planning on integrating that to. He really only has 21 clients, but his goal is to get it to 50 by the end of the year. So to me, it looked like low-hanging fruit, sort of a slam dunk, being able to get him there. He's hiring a salesperson, and I'll be doing some training of that salesperson as well as the rest of the staff. So, and this is a chamber is also a very. I look upon it beyond just the fees. Right now, I'm trying to build a referral base more than the business, because referrals. I see my he's the natural. Today we were at an after-hours networking event at this chamber, and my customer was there, and I met a couple of new people. Well, he said, while we were standing there, if you want to talk marketing, this guy knows more than anybody you'll ever meet. So my name's getting around to him. I try to choose people with that, you know, since they have so much passion and energy that they're going to be promoting me as I help them grow.
Richard, I got a question for you that's come up before. How do you control clients' expectations? You know, you have clients who pay you for joint ventures and then other projects, but where do you draw the line and say, enough's enough, you've done joint ventures and you've performed on your projects, but they maybe want to keep asking for more and more? How do you draw the line and set boundaries for how much you're going to do per project?
Good question. I always draw the line at where I've demonstrated that it worked. So in an alliance step, for example, number 4, when you could go set up 5 or 10 alliances, I'm only going to work on 1 or 2 that I know I can make it work. So that's where I'll get paid, enough to make the step work. Because that's what the client's wanting, is the client's wanting the step to to work, to make an impact. And so I think we as consultants have to take it to at least that point. In that process, you might train someone on staff that can take it from there and do more alliances. Or this is where you could turn it into a contingency opportunity. So if you set up two alliances and they work, and you saw five more that could work, well, you go to the client and say, listen, we've completed step number four. You're in agreement, and I'm in agreement that it's worked, and you're getting new prospects from these alliances. Would you be interested, because I am, as a consultant, in doing more on this step and turning it into a contingency deal? See, that's why I recommended working with the clients first in each step, seeing which ones might result in more contingency work, and then going into that direction. So that's how I'd handle it.
Do you give them a dollar amount of how much they're going to make on that step for drawing the line?
No, all I've done is guaranteed what they paid me. In other words, as long as we've been in agreement that my fee's been covered, and by golly, good news is it's even done more than that. Now would you like me to work for you further? And I'd be willing to do it on a contingency basis.
And Richard, my question is once you get to that, how are you managing and tracking revenue from those multiple relationships?
You mean for the contingency?
Yes.
You mean if you're going to do more?
You know, you've got coupons and different things that you're setting up, or, you know, cross mailers. Do you manage that with information?
It usually then comes in the number of prospects. And so, again, you're back to measuring what's growing in the prospect area. So alliances, cross promotions, and all of that is designed to do one thing for the client, and that's increase the number of prospects that are either inquiring on from the coupon or the company's making contact with. And so that's where your measurement would be. That could be done in ACT. It could be done in Quicken, even, I think, can do it. You know, just whatever is being used as a capturing tool, or as Michael even indicated, you've set it up yourself.
Anyone else? This is the time. Anything that's on your mind?
Yeah, this is Tom in Denver, and the main thing, I'm trying to just apply the system to my existing companies at this point, which is my graphic design, web design company, iWave Media, which I'm trying to morph that into more of a marketing focus. But I still want to offer my old services, and I'm thinking that would be a way to, you know, give added value and could be, you know, my foot in the door and so on. You know, if hopefully when I get busier and busier, I'll just actually start outsourcing more of that. But, you know, why turn that work down? And it'll help make the sale, too. Just, you know, if you hire me, we get into something and we decide you need a brochure. It's just like we just do the brochure. You know, I could even roll it into the cost if it's not going to.
Absolutely.
You know, if I'm designing a postcard or something, why even ask for any more money if I'm already getting $2,000 for the step? And it's just a way to give the client extra value. And then rather than say, oh, you have to go out and find someone to do this for you. And also, if we're already developing a USP and working on the materials, I mean, getting the content, the copy and the content for a printed piece or a web piece is like 80% of the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So once you have all the content for a website put together, which you're going to actually be accumulating while you're going through the steps with a client, you know, you already have that content. You know, I found that just through experience, that's like half the battle with a web
extract. And for everybody, that's why USP is number one.
So
the content gets established.
And then I have get your opinion about.
You did an interview with Print Broker, who did the same sort of approach in terms of.
Right.
Clients.
Yeah, I believe I did.
The USP I'm going with now, this is my new USP, is we deliver the complete marketing package. And then it just says training, advertising, graphic design, web, and programming. So that's kind of the angle I'm going for. And I just, you know, if you any ideas, I'd be interested in hearing about
well,
it.
Well, I
don't need to work it more.
I think you still maybe need to adopt some of the HMA guarantee in there, and because a lot of your companies will say the same thing. A lot of your graphic companies and advertising companies will say we offer the complete package, you know, and so to me it still sounds a little generic, and so you might want to look at trying to add a little bit of uniqueness with your guarantee or something like that.
So I also need to say that we're going to be implementing the package and guaranteeing
right.
X amount of growth, X amount of days.
and then that's going to put it over the top. So I need to keep working on that.
And just overall, I'm having trouble finding time to really get through the material and finding a place to really, I'm starting to watch some of the DVDs, and I've just been trying to read and everything, but I'm kind of stretched kind of thin. I mean, what's the most critical stuff to get started with this package that you sent me? What DVD should I really start listening to first? And what material should I start reading first?
Well,
it
depends on where you're at. Is your number one goal getting clients and generating cash flow? Or is your number one goal understanding the content first and working with existing clients? Where are you at? What's your most objective?
My top priority is this horse racing product I've been working on.
Right.
And which is a joint venture with my design iWave Media company.
Okay.
So I want to get my company all up to speed. I want to, get a USB incorporated into it and get the foundation in there as much as I can. And make that my test piece. At the same time, I need to be working on the horse race thing, the Pace Pals thing.
Is the horse racing more important than your graphic company right now?
So I see them as being pretty closely dovetailed.
Yeah.
And I can explain that real quick. It's a joint venture. I'm going to have all the information that we're sending out about the horse racing thing. I'm putting a little thing about the bottom, down at the bottom, about it being an iWave Media joint venture and things like that to promote my own business. And for like a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to Craig about, where we're going with this, and I was telling him that our goal has to be to try and make this the number one story of the Kentucky Derby this year. And he found that kind of interesting, the sense of he wanted to know what I was smoking. We had a meeting over the weekend with the NTRA, the National Thoroughbred Racing Association, and after the meeting, he said, I remember what you said about it being the number one story of the Kentucky Derby this year. And he said, I know what you're talking about now. He's actually seeing that that's a possibility.
Did they give you an endorsement?
NTRA?
Uh-huh.
We're negotiating a email blast to all their their customers, and we have some other stuff that they want to do that's really interesting that I can't really talk about.
I think your focus on the horse racing probably is valuable enough that it will help your agency. In other words, the work you do implementing the system into the horse racing will get your agency more out there.
We're definitely going to be getting interviewed by newspapers and things like that. At least industry, we're going to get a lot of industry exposure with, industry radio and cable and so on. I mean, that stuff's already a given, I think.
Yeah.
But it could be actually national, TV and radio and papers and things like that. So I need to get my partner, Craig, to have him give my USP. If they're interviewing, he has to, call me, his marketing consult, recite my USP on national television. That's my goal. I guess none of my job's done, right?
Well, I think then as far as the materials go, just go methodically through them as you execute for your horse racing.
And that's just basically make those my test subjects and try and stay focused.
I went through everything at the beginning, but I'm finding is that each time I'm implementing a project, I will re-listen and watch the DVDs.
Go back and review the pieces that are represented in the current project, whatever you happen to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find much that is in there that Richard and Michael supplied, as well as other people. I love Dan Kennedy and Jay Abraham, and just finding what they're saying so often for me, it's very helpful.
Okay, well.
All right, anyone else? Anything at all?
I've got another question here.
Go for it.
Jeremy Wood again. The marketing strategy workshop and the opportunity analysis. Which one do you want to use when you're talking to a new prospect?
Opportunity analysis.
Is that because the marketing strategy workshop is just going to take too much of your time to take?
Yeah, and Michael, I'm trying to make sure, is that something I've sent or you've sent?
The opportunity analysis, we all know what that is. Jeremy, that's used to get your clients when you're prospecting and you meet with them face-to-face or over the phone to determine do they have assets, are they someone you want to work with. That's your sales presentation, really.
Drive them to my website first and have them watch that marketing strategy workshop so they have a better idea about what it's...
The articulate presentation where Richard and I are role-playing? Well, actually, that you could use both. Richard, that's the one we role-played and we took someone through the hour-long presentation that outlines the whole system. Now, you can use that marketing strategy workshop. It depends how busy you are. You know, if you've had 5 or 6 or 7 or maybe 10 potential clients and you want to leverage your time and really filter out the most qualified ones, you could say, look, before we meet face-to-face, I'd like to get you comfortable with what the system is that I'm trained in, and you could send them to that link and let them watch that presentation, that hour-long presentation, because that will outline what you're trained to do for them. Then you can meet with them face-to-face, if they're still willing, and take them through a personal opportunity analysis where you analyze their business one-on-one. Or you could skip the strategy workshop and just do the opportunity analysis over the phone or face-to-face to determine are they qualified prospect. The online one is just a tool that's great for doing stuff long distance or even locally, just to pre-qualify.
Qualifier, yeah.
Yeah, it's a qualifier. And an educator, you know, and a good tool for you, you know, to keep track if you're talking to someone over the phone as well.
What how really interested they are if they don't go and list a qualifier.
Well, my personality is such that time wasters annoy me greatly, and so I want to try to screen them with some automated setups I have. And another idea I had that I want to run by both of you is, one thing I learned in real estate is that when you're running an ad either for motivated sellers of real estate or people to possibly buy your real estate, if you put a 24-hour automated number in the ad, it pulls better. And as soon as they call the 24-hour automated message, they can hit 1 or whatever that will instantly call you if they want. But it's a low-threat way for them to find out more about it. So I wanted to drive people to a 24-hour number and my website, which would have the marketing strategy workshop on it, more information, how it works. But I don't want to give them too much information either. I want them to call me, but I want to drive more people to those automated setups and filter more so the people that I talk to aren't wasting my time.
No, that's great. That's typical, you know, Jeff Paul, Dan Kennedy strategy. Those, and what you could do is you could run a little ad, a classified ad or a postcard mailing or whatever, and have direct them to your website. And that marketing strategy workshop, when you become an HMA consultant, and anyone on the line who hasn't taken advantage of this, I will customize that for you. So you'll have your picture, your email address. The very last slide tells the viewer who to call, the number, your address. You can attach up to 5 links in the attachment section. They could be free reports you want to give out. They'll have your header and footer. So no one comes back to me. That'll be your presentation. We can even record an introduction in your own voice. I'll do that for you. So that's part of what you get with the system, is that customized presentation, the articulate presentation, which I'm sure most of you have seen already. So that becomes your own. And you can direct them with classified ads to a website that they can view that and direct them to what to do next if they're qualified.
Are you doing that in the local business paper? Are you doing it in the local Sunday edition of your regular newspaper?
No one's doing it yet. He was entertaining the idea.
Because I did my phone line and message for doing that, but I haven't run an ad, and I was just wondering if anybody's had that experience.
I've never done it. So I couldn't tell you.
Sort of a Dan Kennedy magnetic copy.
All right, does that answer it, Jeremy?
Yeah, it does.
It's a powerful presentation. It's a great leverage of your time.
It definitely is impressive. I actually took that presentation and recorded it onto my computer and then put it on my MP3 player, and I'm listening to it over and over to try to burn the presentation in my own head.
Right.
So I'll have it ready to fire out when I talk to people, too.
Right. Now, you had asked what's in the HMA University in one of your questions, and in the HMA University, you have links to all the presentations, all the PowerPoint slides. You have the file for that big articulate presentation that you can download. We've also got that same presentation where if you wanted to create a PowerPoint, just a general PowerPoint presentation, I have all the separate slides in there so you can create your own PowerPoint presentation. Then there's a smaller marketing workshop presentation that comes in the printed material with the HMA system, and Richard presented it, I think, in the training. You have the slides to that. You also have access to other training calls and recordings that I've done with consultants over the last year and a half in that HMA University, and a lot of the stuff's been digitized, like the postcards and letters, and when you after you meet with a client, a presentation or an offer, what you can do for them. All that stuff is in the HMA University when you get access to it.
Is that audio?
Yeah, that presentation, you can download the MP3 of that and download the audio separate. Sure, the audio's there as well, and that's all in the PowerPoint slide section.
Yeah, given my time constraints, just listen to MP3s. It seems to be the best thing for my busy schedule.
Yeah, you know, if you're exercising or you burn a CD and you're in the car or whatever, that is a great time to do that.
I just wanted to make a couple of comments and come back to something or a question Wayne asked earlier about generating leads, and I guess I should preempt the whole thing by saying that, you know, I'm so new in this HMA game that your writing on the package that you sent to me is still wet. I listened last night to the guy in Ireland, the guy who wants to be the number one HMA consultant in the world, and something he said in that really struck home to me, and that was that we are our own worst customer. And he said that he had to apply all of the material to himself, A, to learn it, and B, to get something out of it. And it ties in with what our graphic artist guy on the line, he now said, that he's struggling to set up his own USP. And I've had similar dramas over the years in working with myself and my own businesses. So I think that's something we all need to keep in mind. The other thing was, coming back to Wayne's question about generating leads, I've used the direct mail approach, and last week I sent out 30 letters, and so far I've got two HMA appointments or business opportunity appointments to be done that have come from that. And I sent out four emails, and they've come from, you know, people who use the coupon approach here to try and get business for themselves. I simply use that as a database, and that's who I sent my covering letter out to. And so far, you know, I'm pretty pleased with the result that's coming through from that. And the other thing that Richard said was about alliances, and comes back to the Jay Abraham question about, you know, who already works with the people that you're targeting. And I'm looking at the larger plumbing supply organizations and trying to get them, or thinking about wanting them to sponsor a presentation, and you know, what's in it for them. If I can grow their clients' businesses, what's going to happen to their businesses? And I think that's the approach we all need to be taking.
Exactly.
So I just want to make those few comments.
Yeah, well stated. There's a consultant in the UK, Mark Waitley. Mark, by any chance, are you on the line? I don't think he told me he didn't think he was going to be able to make it. But he did send me some comments, and he said, you know, there's all these networking events, and he goes to these. Here's what he said here. I'm a member of BNI. That stands for Business Networking International. It works very well. I have a few people that find work for me, and I pay them a finder's fee based on percentage of sales when the job turns into a client, and I'm paid basically as they are endorsing me. He added some comments just for the call here if he was unable to attend. He says, regarding pricing, he's working on a retainer with a few clients who are paying him $1,000 a month for a session once a fortnight, plus 10% of the increased sales. He's also working on a bi-module basis and following the modules in the system. He's charging $3,000 to $4,000 a module. Progress. I'm going down a training route as well as a consulting coaching linking with local colleges, adapting their material, plus I'm adding other material and obtaining grants from the colleges to help the business owners fund it. Richard, it's kind of similar to what you're doing with the manufacturing associations. I have a very large client who is also based in the U.S. All right, when it's in the bag, he'll tell me more about it. But those were a couple of things. The BNI, I've heard that be very successful in networking and just getting out there.
My sister's really into BNI. She's like, because we've been comparing notes on the phone. She's in that, what's it called, action coaching. And my brother-in-law, a different brother-in-law, I have five sisters. And, yeah, they've been really, you know, into all that stuff. So we've been comparing that. I'm going to definitely tell her and all her people to send me customers.
On that note, on the BNI, there's a gentleman who is in Detroit. He doesn't have the money for the HMA system, but he's been using all the recordings off the site to go get clients. And this guy's got a great personality, and he's already got five clients. Now, when he first started, he has five clients, but all of them aren't paying him money. He's done some barter things, but as his confidence is going out, he's going to not work with them for free. He's going to start charging them. But this recording, I just put it up on page H of all my audio recordings. Page H is in Harry. Name just slipped my mind, but it's a great illustration of how he uses just his personality to get clients, you know. And if you go to page H, you'll find it. I just have forgotten the guy's name, but that recording is up there as well.
Found any or identified any specific niche that just seem to be really excited and open for it? I know it's a question, but if there are any specific that people have had, I'd be very interested in.
I've found a niche that I'd I think I'd like working in. I sort of accidentally got an opportunity to work with one business in this niche, and or you guys call it a niche. I think it's a great area. What it is self-storage facilities. Yeah, it's a very simple business. The business model is very simple. It looks like a business that it's not going to be real difficult to find, to be able to improve the different areas of their marketing and lead generation and getting customers to stay longer and upselling. Is all that sort of looks like a business that there's a lot of opportunities for that sort of marketing. Anyone had an experience with it?
Did you inquire and ask me about that, and did I send you information on a guy named Fred Gleek? Does that ring a bell?
You didn't send me that information.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, there's a guy, a very good marketer, online marketer. His name is Fred Gleek, serious Dan Kennedy student. So you want to search his name, because this is the field he marketed to, his Dan Kennedy-style information products. And if you just, or I bet you may be able to pick up a used copy, or even if you, you know, got it brand new, find his self-storage system, because he worked that niche for many years here in the U.S. I don't know if he's still working it, but he is the self-storage guy, a real expert in direct marketing. So you can take that and transfer that over to where you are for sure.
Excellent.
Fred Gleek, it'll be a gold mine of information for you for that niche. I think it's G-L-E-E-K, Fred Gleek.
I've got a quick question for Phil. Are you still online, Phil?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to know the letter that you sent out. Was that the letter which was in the HMA package there?
No.
That's your own letter, is it?
Yep.
Phil, who did you send those out to, Phil?
Well, the people who advertised in this coupon booklet, trying to get new customers for themselves.
Oh, I see. You sent it directly to the advertisers of the coupon booklet.
Well, to the people who advertised in the coupon booklet.
Oh.
You put your ad in this coupon booklet. My letter went to you.
Very good. That's great. 2 out of 30. That's a good response.
And still going. It hasn't been a week yet.
What did the letter basically say? I mean, was it a short letter, a long letter?
Just over a page, but basically it said you're advertising or you're using coupons to advertise to customers. You're obviously interested in growing your business. How about we have it? I'll send you the letter if you like me to distribute it. I'm not trying to be secretive about it.
Email it over if you don't mind sharing it, because if that letter brings a result like that where you are, it'll probably work for anyone anywhere in the world. That'd be great. Thanks for sharing it.
Where's Wayne at?
Central Coast.
Oh, okay. Sydney. Hang on.
Yeah, just up the road. Where are you?
Sydney.
Oh, yeah, where in Sydney?
West Tennant Hills.
Okay.
Yes, I have a relative there.
Excellent.
Hey, Richard, I got a question for you, and maybe some of the consultants will be able to relate to this. Let's say you're working with a client, and the client's paid you for 2 or 3 or 4 of the projects. You know, he's still wanting more. Now, I say you didn't draw the line with how many joint ventures or what have you, and then you go back and look at some of the first things he's done. So let's say you've done a couple projects for him, but he's not acting on what you've consulted with him, or he's not implementing on, you know, some of the things that you've worked with him, but he's still wants to continue. You call it
anti-USPs.
Anti-USPs?
Right.
So you've got a client who had good intentions when you're starting. What things can you share maybe with any examples where they start real good, but they kind of peter out as projects go down the road?
Well, I think I would just preface this by saying that in my experience, any lack of execution on the client's part has often been because they've had the wrong people in the wrong places. So if that has happened, I'm getting more bold in telling people to fire people. I'm getting more bold in telling owners that they've got the wrong people in the wrong places. So you want to try and understand why it dropped off. And I'm giving you what I think is probably 90% of the reason, is that these owners have got wrong people in the wrong places. So before moving forward, I would get that fixed. I would get whatever was killing me, killing execution, fixed. And if it was the owner, that's a tough one to fix. You can't fire the owner. But usually as you're executing your marketing, you're going to be working with one of his staff or a couple of employees. And they're going to be the ones that have been charged with executing, getting the database up and going, getting your letters out, salespeople forming alliances better than they had been. So it's usually not the owner that's always been charged with execution. So I would try and get rid of anything that had been in the way first. and then usually you could see more clearly whether you want to move forward or not.
Question right along those lines. That's okay. This is Jeremy again. With execution, do you have some kind of forms or checklist or some kind of a system that you use to hold the employees accountable for their part?
I've not built it that deep, Jeremy. It may be something that we should look at. I guess no. The answer just is no. I haven't developed anything like that.
But you obviously, as many years as you've been doing this, it hasn't been a great need, I'm assuming.
I guess the steps of the system that are already there, the four steps into each step, that's enough. I mean, I'll know if those four are getting done or not. And then it's a matter of getting rid of or moving over or bringing in someone different that could do those four things, you know. So you're right, it hasn't been a big enough issue to do much more than that.
All right, anyone else? Anything anyone can think of?
I was thinking about the 80-20 rule yesterday, you know, about how 80% of your efforts only bring 20% of your results and vice versa. So at what point do you want to go through all of their efforts? Say, for example, they have a Yellow Page ad and then they're running some big ads in the paper and then maybe some direct mail. At what point do you want to look at those and say to them, it looks like direct mail in a certain case is bringing you a lot more bang for your buck than the other two, and at what point do you want to encourage them to decrease the other two and increase the more effective one? Because you can obviously, you know, optimize their marketing spending just by doing that.
That would usually be handled in step two. And as your integration of the USP. During that integration, you're going to want to look at all of these areas he's spending money and begin to ask that very question. And it may be then that judge each one on profitability. What's bringing in the company the most profit? And if it's all of them are profitable, then you want to keep all of them and get your USP integrated. See what happens with a better maybe follow-up system on the leads, all of step two, in other words. Everything that you're doing in step two, you should be at the end of that step easily better able to make that call.
Anyone else?
Michael, I know you've had experience in this, which I imagine you have as well, but Michael, I told you about my client at her store. He's getting phone calls a day on the average because of various media he's advertising in.
How many calls is he getting?
He's getting about 100 calls a day. So I'm trying to set him up so that data, you know, that they're writing down everybody's name and, you know, making sure to record that information. But the personnel and resources with his store are a problem because he doesn't have enough staff and he can't find the staff that he needs. Are there, you talked about this when you talked about on the recording with your salon, and the tanning, where you found a third party for taking that basic information and doing that pre-sell? Any recommendations on doing
that? There are answering services all over the place that can handle those incoming calls, but you're going to have to get his phone number. You're going to have his phone number with the ability to forward it over to a service. But just look in your Yellow Pages or do a search online for answering services, and there's small boutique answering services to large ones that you can customize an incoming call program. Absolutely. There's lots of services that can do that.
Okay.
Are you saying that his staff is just missing the calls and they're going over to voicemail?
That's part of it, but then there are people are asking for him and he's not available. They're asking for certain expertise because of whatever computer-related problem. So it's not something that you're just catching that information and somebody to write down the information and import it and make sure that they use the database later on.
Well, he needs
to add to what Michael said is not only do you want to be recording information, but you would want this answering service qualifying those 100.
Okay.
You know, you should, with the owner, establish who is really a qualified prospect that we want. And then there's two ways that you're going to cut that 100 down, probably. One is, I don't want this kind, I don't want this kind, and so you set up a qualification, and you might not keep 40 of them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then you want to look at where those 40 are coming from and get rid of that ad source, so that you're not burdening this company with unqualified prospects. And that's kind of what's happening right now. I'm making a guess, but out of 100 calls a day, I'll bet half of them may not even be qualified.
What I did with the tanning bed guy, we took all of his incoming calls. See, his girls were not handling the incoming calls properly at all. So we did a study to see how they monitored them. So I had all his incoming calls routed to this call 8 service, KALL8.com. The call was recorded, so I would monitor and listen how the girls were handling the incoming calls. That record, I think that may be at the HFA University. If it's not, I'll get it up there. But Richard and I analyzed an hour's worth of my client, George Satani. We analyzed his incoming calls and how the girls were really dropping the ball. Now, what's great about this call 8 service is your client could employ someone to go into the call 8 service online, and each one of those calls is recorded, so you can go into that control panel and listen to the entire conversation. And as that person listens to that individual call, he can make notes. There's a text area for each one of the calls, and he can make notes. So he could take notes of what the call was about and say, call this person back. And it's all saved in this control panel. So he can have one person take notes and identify which callers need to be followed up on, which ones need to be upsold, which ones were a waste of time. So you can analyze that pattern of incoming calls very effectively using this call 8 service by recording and documenting what each call was about. And that's what we did with him.
How much does call 8 cost?
It's very inexpensive. It's just pennies a minute, and having the numbers only a couple bucks, it's very inexpensive.
So you just cover that expense for your client then?
I covered it for him. It was just, you know, I take that in consideration when I charge him for the project. It was really minuscule. It wasn't a big deal. But what I did, I covered it while I was analyzing. Then I had him set up his own call 8 account, which he pays for now because he's continuing to use it. So I don't pay his monthly fees. I did it to analyze his incoming call patterns at first, and I did cover that, but now he pays for it. Some of you guys probably heard the recording with Dave Flannery, and I had a lot of questions come in for him. He was unable to make it today, but tomorrow I'll be interviewing him again, just individually, myself and him, and I've got a bunch of questions that I'm going to ask him from people who heard the recording. So if anyone has any specific questions for David, email them to me, and I'll include them in the interview. I'll be interviewing him tomorrow this time, 10 o'clock. So anyone who has any questions related to that, on what he was doing, how he did it, anything at all, send me those questions and I'll include them and answer them for you on your behalf. Anyone else? Anything at all?
Comment, Michael, and you remember that you were interviewed that Ari Gelfer, Unlocking the Sales Game. I found a call center up in Wisconsin that does inbound and outbound, and I'm in negotiations with them right now on price, but I was talking to him this morning and said if it's successful for you, me, him setting up appointments, that might be a resource that you'd be able to put out to the other consultants.
Sure, well, share with me how it goes and the price and everything. Be glad to do that.
The Elance, it didn't work out for me, so I tried to find a more professional firm.
Elance can be tricky. You got a lot of flaky people out there.
Tell me about it.
I'll tell you another good source for anyone, at least here in the U.S. I'm not sure if Craigslist, Craigslist.com, has anyone heard of that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, eBay bought them out, I think, for 4.1, I don't know if it's a million, it must have been the millions, but that is a great resource, Craigslist.com, if you're looking for anyone to do anything. The ads only cost 25 bucks a piece, and you'll instantly be flooded with people who want to work with you. And this goes beyond just people to do. You know, I put an ad just recently for some help in editing my audio recordings. I mean, I was flooded with all kinds of very qualified audio editors here in San Diego to do the work. I was real impressed with that, and it was only a $25 ad you pay online. And these people who are using Craigslist, you know, they're internet savvy. You just describe what you want, and you will definitely get very rapid responses for people looking to do work.
So you found people that actually lived right in your area?
Yeah, right in my area. I did it here in San Diego because I wanted to get some outside help in the audio editing, and I figure why not do it here in San Diego. I could have done it anywhere, but I just chose to do it here in San Diego. But Craigslist.com, if you're looking for expertise, it's out there. Lots of people need work, part-time work from their computer, and you just state the hourly rate or what you're willing to pay, and you'll get qualified people.
I have a question, Richard, on just general marketing with a direct sales letter or postcards, or there's various various different ways of doing it with direct mail. But what I have a challenge with is, okay, do I find a graphic artist who's going to format this in a specific way, with the, you know, and then I can do the copying and whatnot. But what is your experience on just doing direct mail for your customers? Is it the letter? Is it the postcard that's bringing them in? Or what do you find to be the most effective piece?
It seems over the years that the postcard has evolved as kind of a effective way to reach people. And again, it depends on what your objective is, whether it's to create a lead or whether it's to actually make a sale. But I've just found that the postcard seems to be, and there's just been a flurry of companies arise over the last 5 years that all they do is postcards. And it's because more and more are finding that an effective way.
Are you adding a lot of specific graphics or layout, or is there something?
Again, just depends on your client.
Really? Okay. And
sometimes there's artwork on it. Sometimes there's just text. It depends who you're mailing to and who your client is.
Yeah, I would say, Paul, it's the words. What does it say? You know that from Bedell's course.
I was just wondering about other type of real-world experience and other thoughts and comments.
Now, Philip, you've been using the direct mail piece, but that's for you. And then, you know, when you're working with a client, and if the direct mail is going to his client base, you know, mail has always been fine because the client is familiar with their customers. The customers know the client, so they're opening the mail. You know, if you're going cold, if you're doing a direct mail campaign that's cold, that's where you could limit some of your costs by starting with a postcard just to see how that goes, and maybe a second step is a letter.
So you also may want to see what the client's been doing. If it's acceptable and they're doing somewhat okay, you may want to kind of match the look or the feel of what they're doing so it's not too much of a shocker. Just like if you were to put an editorial ad in a newspaper or a magazine publication, you're always going to get a better result when you match the look and the feel of that publication so it looks like it just fits within that place.
Being a graphics guy, I've had experience with postcards, and I always try and tell people to just to pay the extra and go to the bigger size, the oversized cards, because they tend to wind up in the A pile. You know, in our area we have, well, Bed Bath & Beyond is all over, right? They do the oversized postcards. They have the 20% off coupons really big on the postcard.
Oh, that's right.
And those always wind up in the A stack.
All right, very good. Well, anyone else?
This is John. I have a few questions on how to apply some of the material that was presented in the HMA system. The first question I have is, if you have a client that has limited or no end user contact information, because they sell through distributors and the distributors obscure that information or are unwilling to share it, if you're trying to identify the USP and you're trying to conduct a customer focus group, how would you go about getting those customers? Or are we talking about a direct marketing or direct mail campaign at this point?
I've hit exactly those situations. And two things that you want to make a decision on. One is, are the customers the distributor? It may be that the USP needs to be for the distribution channel. And see, more and more, is this a manufacturer?
Yeah, it is. It's a manufacturer, and they also source some accessories from low-cost countries, and then they use that to broaden out their product line.
And so are they selling both direct and through distributors?
Some of the products are sold direct, but the direct sales have services attached or bundled to the products. The products that are sold direct have no services or anything. What I've been able to find out, or what seems to be happening, is there's very little selling effort occurring, and what's happening is that the end user is looking at a catalog or looking at a print advertisement, and I guess depending upon when they're ready to buy and depending upon whose ad they see, they act upon that information, then they'll contact the distributor, and by that time they already know what product they want, and the distributor is really acting more like a purchasing agent or a buyer.
Okay, yeah. Then to continue to answer that, one is, do I have a USP that I need to develop for the distribution channel? Because they're the ones that are going to buy from my manufacturer. They're the ones that got to sell. They're the ones I want to keep buying. And then usually what I have been able to find is one or two of those distributors will go ahead and they'll know that we're working on marketing to help them, and they would okay giving us some customers to talk to. If the relationship is good between the distributor and the manufacturer, I mean, I've had a manufacturer that has actually taken over the marketing for distributors. distributors because they weren't doing the job.
Mm-hmm.
And the distributors were happy. And they gave them their customer base. They gave them everything as long as there wasn't going to be any cheating. So the relationships are all different, but I've never had any that have said, no, you can't talk to the end customer if they clearly understood that this was going to help them.
And this leads on to that first question. If you have a situation where you have a client and you are able to talk to the end users to find out what the USP, and you discover that the competition has the same exact USP, what's the best method for developing a new USP?
Oh, boy, there you go. There's the question of the day, and that is if the competitor has the same USP, then your client does not have a USP, and you then are burdened with creating a new one. And the way to find it is to, again, go back to the industry and look at what the competitors are not providing that's important to the customer.
Okay.
Then that can be your client's USP.
Okay.
So you have to find a void. You have to find something empty that his competition is not providing that is important to that customer base. Then that can become your client's USP.
And if you're trying to determine what the competitor's USP is, but what if the competition's using only image advertising?
Well, then that's good news. Because that means it's a weak USP. That means there probably isn't one.
Right.
That all they're doing is image stuff. And that's a good door opener then for you and your client.
And I have one final question, if I may. Let's say the client has a hypothetical new product they want to launch or a new product offering, but they don't know or they don't have an idea or a clue as to what the market is or even if the market would accept the product. If you were to essentially craft an offer with an artist rendering of what this product is or what the offer is, and you run a mailing list, and you execute a direct marketing campaign, what should you look for in terms of a response? I guess the first part is that a good way to quantify the market for this product they're offering? And if so, what kind of response rate am I looking for? And should there be a minimum number of names on that list?
Okay, great question. The first place I would go is, would the product be of use to my current customer base? If it is, that's where I'd want to start, okay? And then what market is that, and can I get more names? So you want to try and duplicate your current customer base first. Now if you're in a situation where it's a totally different market with a different customer base, your approach was just right. It was fine. Get a list, do a test mailing, and whether it worked or not depends on if it made money. Don't worry about percent of response. That's
okay.
Irrelevant. You could have a 1% response and it not make money in one test. You could have a 0.1% response and it makes money. And so the one that makes money is the one that worked. Okay? So that's how you'd want to judge it, is did I get X amount of leads and did we convert X amount of leads to revenue, take out my cost of goods, take out the cost of the test market, the mailing and all of that, and maybe some allocated overhead, and did I net?
Okay.
And if I netted, then I'm going to do the test again.
But what if you have a situation where the product's not, it's very new to the market and there's capital involved, capital investments needed to be made to manufacture the product, and the client wants to know what's the market and how much am I going to sell this new product?
Okay, then just send that mailing out as a test to the market. Say, and be right up front with the market and say, we're running a test. We'd like your input. We'd like your feedback. And maybe you put some pricing on there that they check off that they would pay for it or not, you know.
Right.
So if it's market research like that, then that's a different story.
What would you look for a response rate, a 1% response rate or something greater than that?
You'd then be able to estimate if you're going to make money. So let's say you got back 1% response. And they said, yeah, we would pay X amount of dollars for this. Then you're just on an estimate.
And should there be some minimum number that I should send this mailing out to? Or that?
Yeah, you know, it depends on how big the market is, but 1,000 should probably be a minimum.
Okay.
1,000 to 5,000 range is a good test.
Thank you very much. Those were all the questions I had.
Good. Okay.
All right. Very good. Well, Richard, I know you've got to take off on an appointment, and our time is running out here. So I think we're going to end the call here. And I want to thank everybody for joining us. I hope this has been helpful for everyone. We'll definitely schedule and do another one. And anyone who has any questions, certainly email them to me or call me. And Tom, I'll get back with you shortly.
Great.
And I appreciate everyone joining and participating and sharing. Michael with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com in another bonus tip. How would you like to turn your $28 book or ebook or even a concept in your head into a $3,900 information product? I'll provide you the secrets on how to do this. If you'd like a completely free 30-day trial of my system for turning your simple book or even just a concept in your mind into an information product that you can sell for $97, $197, or even as much as $3,900 or more. This system includes a whole range of tricks and tips to help you pack your audio program full of great stories that take control of your listeners' brains. My information product creation system comes with my personal guarantee that you'll create an information product worth from $97 to $497 that's designed to sell like hotcakes. This is a 30-day free trial. If you'd like information on this, please email me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line, write in all caps, $28 book, and I'll email you information on how to turn your $28 book or even a concept in your mind into a $3,900 information product. Hi, this is Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff, HardToFindSeminars.com. Here is another bonus tip and a valuable service that I offer to select clients. If you can talk into an ordinary telephone, you can be selling your own high-priced audio programs in as little as 7 days. This is the easiest way on earth to create a series of powerful audio recordings for your own information product. I call you on an ordinary telephone and interview you live on a series of related hot topics about your niche subject. I take care of all the editing, all the technical stuff, and I give you the finished MP3s or WAV files and audio transcripts. I only have time to give this deluxe personalized service to a few more carefully selected clients. If you're interested in developing and creating your own valuable information products that you could have complete in as short as 7 days and be selling for as high as $300, $500, even $3,900, please contact me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line of your email, please write info product information in all capital. Make sure I have your name and a way to contact you by phone, and we can talk about your specific ideas. Or you may call me at 858-274-7851. Hi, it's Michael Senoff here with another bonus tip from Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. It's called an audio infomercial. Your audio infomercial, which I create for you, will sell more products of yours faster, easier, and for less cost than any conventional advertising method, and I guarantee it 100%. Imagine catching yourself at concert pitch talking about what makes your business or your product service unique, what makes it special. Imagine taking a professional recording of that perfect sales presentation that I create for you and giving it to your prospect as an audio CD or an internet download from your website. I can do this for you faster than you ever thought possible with my personalized audio informational recording service. If you're interested in this unique service, please contact me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line of your email, in all capitals, write audio infomercial, and I will get back with you with more information. Hi, it's Michael Senoff here with another tip from Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. This tip is one that is dear to my heart, and the reason why is because I know what a difference it can make for your business. It has to do with editing your audio recordings. If you are using audio online or offline to sell, market, and educate your prospects, this tip will be the most important tip you ever hear from me. Editing your audio content before you publish it to your site simply gets better results compared to unedited audio content. Think about this. A new song on the radio may be in the editing studio for months before it's released to the public. A new movie may take years in the editing process before it's released to the big screen or on DVD. Well-written sales letters, online promotions, books, and commercials are all meticulously edited to perfection before they are released. You would never dream of releasing an unedited version of any of these sales vehicles. So why would you publish unedited audio? Unedited audio content is abandoned by the listener faster, it produces less sales for you, and it actually destroys your credibility as a publisher. So why are we seeing so much unedited content proliferating the internet? The reason is simple. There are very few people who offer audio editing services who know what they are doing. Editing audio is kind of like plastic surgery. It's part skill and part an art form. You need someone with both the skill to do it and someone who understands marketing and selling. A poor result can be gained by both a skilled surgeon as well as a good technical editor. Who you choose to do your audio editing can be one of the best investments in your business. At HardToFindSeminars.com, we have been editing online and offline web content for 6 years. We have perfected a proprietary editing system that has been proven to get your customers to listen to your audio content longer and to listen to it more often, resulting in more sales for you more often, and with clean edited audio, you can demand more money for your products and services. It's just like in life, you only have one chance to make a first impression. Every time you release and publish unedited audio content, you are projecting a poor, sloppy, I don't care attitude that turns your prospects off. Do your prospects a favor. Service them. Give them your best. Do them a favor by giving them professionally edited audio messages, interviews, teleseminars, and selling promotions by editing your audio. We provide full audio editing services that are fast and at a reasonable rate. We know that editing your audio content can easily pay for itself 20 times over. Call me, Michael Sunoff, for more information at 858-274-7851. I'll spend some time on the phone with you. We'll determine what audio content you're publishing. I'll be glad to offer you a free consultation on my ideas. I'll review some of your audio, and together we'll come up with a solution that gets you better results. Thanks for listening.